to the Steve Cochran Show.
Very good to have Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson in studio, and we share a commonality that I was not aware of, but he came in, and he was offered Halloween candy, and he admitted, as I have admitted in the past, I've got a chocolate problem. And as long as I stay away from it, I'm okay. You have the same issue?
I sure do.
And they're watching you in the office.
Yeah, my secretaries monitor me, unfortunately, 24 hours a day.
Well, how do we do for Halloween? Because Halloween, traditionally, it's a nightmare for Detroit. It's a nightmare for some other cities around the country. And I didn't hear much last night.
No, you know, traditionally here, knock on wood, in Chicago, we don't have the same issues on Halloween night that most major cities have. Mm-hmm. You know, so we put extra patrols out there, and we're very visible, you know, because we want people to enjoy Halloween safely and you know, not have those issues that other cities see.
Yeah, because the kids ought to be able to go out and enjoy the night.
Absolutely.
Justin, say hi.
Hello, Superintendent.
How you doing, Justin?
You know, if you count this past weekend, which is more of the adult Halloween, where there's parties and things like that, it was a very deadly weekend, or at least a violent one. 26 people shot. The numbers just for that Sunday were high.
Correct.
You know, when you have these kind of weekends, because you'll have these moments where it might be a 4th of July or something that were traditionally known to be a high violence weekend, and you can evaluate year to year on that. When you have a weekend that's almost an anomaly like we had this past weekend, how does the police department view that? Is that something that is systemic, that you could say gun violence is getting worse, or is it something that you see as an aberration?
No, it's an aberration, but what we do, because we had Halloween coming up, we partnered with ATF and the FBI, and we put a series of raids together that actually started Saturday night, and it culminated last night, and that resulted in 52 arrests. And, you know, we talked to a U.S. Attorney, John Lau, so he's going to take at least 4 of those cases federally. And what we're trying to do is send that message to people, you know, you commit gun violence in this city or any crimes, that we will hold you accountable for it.
Yeah, and look, we need reforms on all sorts of levels, and one of the things we need reformed is the idea that you can commit a gun crime, and if you have a good lawyer, you're going to be back out in the street in short order, because your men and women who go out and find these bad guys and put them away, they then have to go back to work and find them again. It's outrageous.
That's exactly right, Steve. You know, listen, Chicago, we've recovered, I think, about 7,800 guns so far this year, more than New York and L.A. combined. And it's not because we're better than them. It's because we have that many guns out here on the street. But it's frustrating for officers when they arrest this guy on Monday and then Wednesday or Thursday, they see him right back out there, not just see him, but back out there with another gun. So we just have to do better in our judicial system of holding these people accountable.
Now, some of this stuff's opinion, and because of your position, I don't expect you to jump into my words. However, judges are involved in this as well, and I'm not talking about corruption. I'm talking about doing the right thing, where judges can be talked into continuances and various little legal tricks to make things work, where these gun criminals get back on the street. But I remember vividly serving on a jury a few years ago with a creep that committed a gun crime in one of the projects. And I didn't know at the time, and nobody on the jury knew at the time, that he had committed 2 murders and gotten out of both of them. So they wanted him on this gun crime.
Yeah.
And we got him. We put him away, and he's still in jail now. I mean, point being of the story is, it's possible, and it ought to be done, because it's the right thing to do.
It absolutely is. You know, and I tell you this, Steve, you know, you hear a lot of people advocating for offenders' rights, and I'm all for, you know, being fair. But at the same time, we have to advocate for the victims of these
Amen.
Crimes. You know, because who advocates for that person that has a gunshot wound to the head? That person didn't have a choice in that situation.
Exactly.
But the person pulling the trigger absolutely had a choice, and they made the wrong one.
We're going to talk about the neighborhoods that are suffering the most through this. We're going to talk about the new police academy, and I'm not talking about a movie with Tim Kazurinsky. all coming up. More with Superintendent Eddie Johnson.
This is the Steve Cochran Show
on 720 WGN.
Well, we continue from the world's greatest radio studio here, 303 East Wacker. Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson is here, and I don't understand how you do your day. Do you you're sleeping ever, or what's your story?
Well, you know what? I get up fairly early in the morning, have to get the 9-year-old ready for school, and
right.
Then after that, I head into headquarters, and usually I'm there till about 8 or 9 o'clock at night.
So you're going on the job. I guess my point is 24 hours a day, it's not like you're not on call.
Exactly. So, you know, so if major incidents occur overnight, they're constantly calling me at home. So, you know, it's a grind, but, you know, I love what I do and I love this city. So whatever it takes to make it better, I'm willing to do.
Job bigger than you thought it would be or about what you thought it would be?
I got to tell you, Steve, you know, I was as close to superintendent's chair as you can get. Yep. I was the chief of patrol and a deputy chief right there in the building, but I still had no idea it would take what it actually does, and you don't know that until you actually get there.
Justin was talking about this past weekend, and of course one of the main, and it's personal, you know, pet peeve, beef, whatever, with me is I know how great this city is. Mm-hmm. I love this city. I've chosen to live here and bring my kids up here. And the national story is you're walking up and down Michigan Avenue and it's the Old West and you're going to get shot. Just drives me nuts. Because you and I both know, we all know, there are a handful of neighborhoods where people just want the same thing people in Lake Forest want, people in Naperville want, just to get up in the morning, go to work, do your thing, get your kids to school, get them home safe. And they happen to be in horrible situations because of the guns you talked about.
Right.
How do we get that message out?
So I think, you know, that national narrative that Chicago is just a city on fire, you're right, that frustrates me also. You know, we got pockets on the south and west side where we have those challenges. You know, and what I want to emphasize is the majority of people in those neighborhoods want the same thing.
Absolutely.
That everybody wants.
God bless them.
You know, they do. It's just that we have some drivers of violence that are just, you know, ingrained in those areas, and they don't want to give up that stranglehold that they have. So it's up to the police department and our judicial system to hold those individuals accountable. Because let me point this out. You know, as bad as the national narrative can be in terms of Chicago, we have about 17 neighborhoods in Chicago that are as safe or safer than Los Angeles and Manhattan and New York.
Right.
You know, and I think people forget that. You know, so we have some challenging areas, but we just keep chipping at it until we get it where we want it to be.
Let's talk about some of those challenges. Well, one of the things, and we hear this from our listeners this morning, and a lot of people in Chicago are concerned about the homicide clearance rate.
Mm-hmm.
Why we see such a low number of people actually being arrested for the crimes, for the shootings, for the homicides that we see on the streets. Why is that? What attributes to the idea that we can't find and arrest the people who are doing these crimes?
Okay, so first of all, I think we have to recognize how the clearance rate is calculated, and it's by FBI standards. So we don't just calculate the clearances that we clear in a calendar year, which would be 2018. We also calculate in the clearances that we have from previous years, because at some point you have to account for those clearances. So if you look at it in those terms, our clearance rate is at about 42%. That's still not acceptable. So the clearance rate right now for the calendar year 2018 is at about 18%. But we have to understand, in these murders, a lot of times it's gang-on-gang violence. And that population of people historically, not just in Chicago, but all over the country, they don't cooperate with the police. They just don't. You know, so when you look at it in those terms, we can understand why sometimes it's a difficult process. And I also want to point out that in a lot of those cases, we actually bring people in or know who those individuals are. We just don't have the evidence in the state's attorney's opinion to actually bring charges. So we know who they are oftentimes. We just right. can't charge them.
The correlation, too, we saw the attorney general in Chicago really calling out that they don't want a consent decree coming out of the Justice Department. But they also seem to put a lot on morale. They talked that the consent decree and what we've seen in Chicago, that has affected police morale and they're not doing the job. And he pointed to the clearance rate, pointed to other things. How do you respond to that, to the Attorney General, and the idea that the morale of the Chicago Police Department is low?
So what I would say in terms of the morale affecting the clearance rate, there's absolutely nothing to suggest that. These officers work hard every day, and they really take offense to people thinking that they don't, because they do. But in terms of overall morale, I think in 2016, the beginning of that year, because of what we came off of in 2015, the morale had really, really taken a hit. But I think we've recovered from that. The consent decree, if you really look at it, the recommendations that came out of that consent decree, a lot of the recommendations came from the rank and file police officers. So what that suggests is, A, they want those resources, they want that training, but most importantly, those rank and file police officers want to be better. They want to be the best that they can be for the citizens.
Well, the worst news for a good cop is a bad cop.
That's exactly right. You know, good cops don't like bad cops, because that, you know, typically will paint all of us in that brush,
sure.
with that brush, and that's just not fair. So the majority of cops out here are trying to do the right
thing.
One
of the issues coming out of the consent decree that that you support and Chicago Police is about a new facility, a new training facility. And there was questions about the price tag on that, $95 million. Where do we stand with does Chicago need a new police academy?
Absolutely. You know, the building that we currently utilize was built in 1979. If we want 21st century policing in Chicago, then we have to have a 21st century facility. And let me point out, that new training facility is a public safety facility. So it's the police department, the fire department, OEMC that will house that facility. And I think it's important to recognize, you know, when you look at terrorism across this country, it's imperative that your police department, your fire department, and your communications division train together. That facility will give us the ability to be able to do that.
What's the best thing that's going to go into that facility that you really need?
So the best thing, I think, when you look at us now, it's best practices to have some more scenario-based training for rank-and-file officers so they'll be immersed in the situation before they get out on the street. The best thing about this new facility, right now at the academy that we utilize, we have to conduct that training in hallways, in the parking lot, and on streets.
So you don't have a classroom set up for that.
We don't have that capacity. This new facility will give us the capacity to do that on that campus, and I think that's important.
It's a big deal.
Yeah, it is, because the officers need that hands-on experience so they'll be more prepared when they get out on the street.
Amber?
So you're the superintendent, which is basically the CEO of the, you know, the police officers. And one issue I know we've talked with the heads of military, like that second rank and file for the Navy, is talent recruitment. And when the economy is good, it challenges people going to the military because they have other job outlets. Is that a challenge for you? And then is the Chicago reputation, the national narrative, does that affect people wanting to be a police officer here?
You know, I am very pleased to say we haven't had the challenges that other cities have had in terms of recruitment. You know, our we've given out several tests in the last couple of years, and we've averaged about 8,000-9,000 applicants every time we've given that test. Other cities are really struggling in those terms, but I think that our robust recruitment campaigns that we've carried out is really helping. You know, we do things as basic as myself and the chiefs, we'll get on the phone and call applicants to encourage them to show up for the test. You know, so in that regard, no, it's not affecting us at all.
I want to get one piece of good news out here before I ask you about one other thing, because I know you got to run in just a couple minutes. We were talking off the air, and I find this fascinating, about paperwork. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, the TV version of a cop is, I got to fill out this report.
Right.
And cops, as you said off the air, don't like paperwork.
Right.
But you also said the state's attorney, Kim Fox, worked with the police department. And talk about the percentage change you're seeing that you didn't have before.
Yeah. So, Steve, what happened was when I became superintendent, she became state's attorney, we were looking at their conviction rate in terms of gun crimes. And what we found is that the state's attorney's office needed CPD to do better in terms of writing the reports. So to Kim Fox's credit, what she did, she gave us a group of state's attorneys who came out to all the units in CPD, and we retrained the officers on what they actually needed to be documented. So what that did, I think their conviction rate was somewhere in the high 20s when we started this process, and it's up around 80% now. So that's a huge win.
It's a big win, and it's good news. Last question, and I hope we can do this again, because it's always great having you on the show. Body cams. Everybody wants to talk about body cams. Whether cops like them or don't like them, it's part of your life now. How do you feel about the institution of the body cams and the way they're being used by the Chicago Police Department?
I think we're right on point. And what's interesting, Steve, is when we first rolled those body cams out, the veteran officers, the younger officers loved them from the beginning because they like technology.
Mm-hmm.
The more veteran officers were really resistant towards them. But now, you go out there and talk to veteran officers, they will not leave their buildings without that body cam because they found out that it helps us a lot more than it hurts us, because it helps to tell their side of the story.
Yeah, that's the way it's supposed to work, right?
Exactly.
And we got the audio video part of this all synced up now, because I know there was a technological problem with that, where, you know, the audio was maybe not working in sync with the video.
Yeah, so what happens is the way the cameras are designed, because we have to be mindful of their privacy rights, the audio portion doesn't activate until they actually manually turn on the camera, but the video portion buffers back to the 30 seconds prior to. You know, so
you need about 12 more things to have to think about today.
Yeah. You know, so we're working on that technology to get it better, because we do want to give those officers the protection. And we also want the department to be as transparent as we can be.
God bless you, man. And everybody that works for you. Obviously, this city wouldn't be the great city it is without every man and woman who put that uniform on every day. Yep. So thanks for coming over.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Teddy Johnson, police superintendent.